The director tried to form words. He motioned that I should come closer. He also seemed quite mad. "Watch yourself," Baran warned, as if in high good humor. "The director is a clever beast. He only means you harm, of that I can assure you." I'd taken my eyes off the director to glance at Baran as he spoke. As I looked back, the director sprang at me with his hands outstretched as if to claw my face. "No," Baran said in a steely voice. I crouched, but hesitated to hit the director. I'd killed his clone. I didn't want to kill this clearly misused creature. Before the director reached me, he seemed to strike an invisible wall. He bounced back to crumple onto the floor where he made a mewling noise. I glanced at Baran. The Dominie lowered his arm. I had the distinct impression he'd forced the director back with an invisible ray that had emanated from his palm. "Go," Baran said sternly. The director whimpered, glared at me one last time, then turned while remaining on his hands and knees and scuttled away for the side hatch that had admitted him. I felt a greater sense of loathing for Baran than at any time previously. He had clearly tormented the director to make the proud man act like that. The side hatch slid shut. The director was gone. I turned to Baran, who watched me triumphantly. It was at that point I decided, whatever else happened, that I would kill the Antares Dominie and end his brutality against all who fell into his arrogant power. Chapter 24.
"Look at you," Baran said. "You positively glow with resentment. Do you know why I summoned the director?"
I held my tongue because I didn't trust myself to speak.
"For three reasons," Baran said. "One, you now understand what fate can befall you if you try to betray me. Two, you should realize how I know what I do concerning you and your past, as I have drained the director of his knowledge. And three, he displeased me with his stubbornness. I have a firm rule, Logan. Whatever process or pain one makes me suffer, I ensure that he or she suffers double."
I waited for him to quit gloating.
"Do you disapprove of my philosophy?" Baran asked.
"Does it matter what I think?" I managed to ask. Baran frowned in annoyance, although he said,
"Honestly, not in the slightest."
"I take it you captured the director before your assault at Hera's."
"That is an elementary deduction. If you mean to prove your intellect by that..."
"You said you found it," I said, interrupting his gloating.
"Logan, I urge you to have a care lest you anger me. You saw the director. Do not make his fate yours."
"I understand," I said.
"Do you?"
"I am curious if you'll permit me a question." It took several seconds before Baran said,
"Ask."
"How do you personally emit sonic rays, create invisible barriers, and fly?" I added, remembering how he'd sailed past me to get back to the floater. His eyes seemed to glitter with delight as a secret smile played upon his lips.
"You noticed that," he said. "It seemed in the moment as if you were petrified with terror."
"Looks can be deceiving," I muttered. He rapped his knuckles against the table.
"You asked before how I can dare to think to stand against the Polarians. Do you remember?"
I nodded.
"These Polarians, if the legends are accurate, were able to handle various forces through mental acuity. They had great personal magnetism as well. Each could bend reality to his or her will through a phenomenal process that began in childhood."
I couldn't recall Argon doing those things. I'd saved Argon from an operating table. We had run away together. At no time had he shown such powers. Still, at the end of our time together, he gave me a ring. I'd used the ring to overcome the Star Corps.
"I do not yet possess the mental powers the Palladians did," Baran said, "although I study and analyze the process. Know, however, that I am one of the most modified beings in existence."
"Modified?" I asked. "You have bionic limbs?" Baran frowned.
"Nothing as crude as that. I do not mar my physical nature by lopping off my body parts. Such a creature becomes a cyborg. That has nothing to do with me."
"I don't understand," I said.
"You witnessed my flight, yes?"
"Back in the cavern," I said.
"Exactly," Baran said. "I have anti-gravity mesh embedded in the soles of my feet."
I raised my eyebrows. That was interesting. How do you activate and power such a mesh?" I asked.
"Ah," he said, tapping the side of his nose. That is a mystery, is it not?
The sonic blasts? I asked.
Logan, I'm in an expansive mood, as you can no doubt sense. Perhaps that is why I showed you the director. Perhaps that is why I tell you about my modifications. Know, and be amazed by the knowledge, that I have 9 sensitivities, 4 energies, 3 projections, 2 nullifications, and 3 lethal emanations, in addition to various abilities such as the full use of my brain, and an additional gland that prevents fatigue in the normal sense.
These modifications are inside you? I asked.
Precisely, he said. A dominie of the Antares Institute is never without his weapons and abilities. We're natural juggernauts in our own person. Perhaps now you can understand why I am higher in the plane of existence than a being such as yourself. I have modified my abilities, heightening them to an incredible degree. This expedition will be my crowning achievement. For you see, Logan, I have come to realize that only the Polarians were greater than I am. Thus, since I am the greatest being in the galaxy, I must pit myself against others even greater. By defeating them and stealing their prizes and abilities, I will truly become the greatest being that ever lived.
I rubbed my jaw. It appeared that the Dominie had turned himself into a walking arsenal and super genius, along with gaining Superman powers. If he no longer became tired and could use his mind to the fullest, I began to perceive the difficulty in beating him. No wonder he knew when I was lying. He could probably see my heart rate change or how much I sweated. I've done everything you asked of me, I said, letting a whine creep into my voice.
Is this another attempt at subterfuge?
No, I said. I'm beginning to see how you've outsmarted me each time. I've been thinking how you tamed the director. I don't want to become like him. Baran studied me and a faint smirk lifted the corner of his mouth.
Look, he said, pointing at a blueprint. I believe I've found it.
I focused on the chart. It was a blueprint with all kinds of alien symbols. While I was able to speak Baran's language, it would seem I couldn't read it, or read Polarian, if that's what this was.
Do you know what you're looking at? Baran asked.
I don't.
I believe it is the portal to their final destination, he said. Much as you traverse the space region linked to the Bermuda Triangle in order to reach the sandy beach with a portal to the Isham world, this is the path that leads to the Polarian paradise.
I looked up sharply.
Yes, Baran said. By everything I've studied, by each fact I've pieced together, I have realized they created a perfect place for themselves. According to legend, the Polarians grew weary of the ignorant masses and the beast-like intelligences that aped civilized behavior. They built paradise, using the Earth as their launch point to reach it.
And you think there are living Polarians at this paradise? I asked.
Argon's existence as much as proves it, Baran said.
But Argon was in a stasis tube in Greenland for thousands of years.
Yes, as a final guardian, Baran said. Look, don't you understand that you didn't speak to a full-fledged Polarian? Such a being would have blasted you. You spoke to the proto-Polarian who failed to make the cut.
I scratched my head. How do you know all that? Baran laughed.
I am the master scholar, the greatest ever thrown up by the Antares Institute. I have traveled thousands of light years crisscrossing the galaxy, searching each clue, each hint left by the ancient Polarians and their scribes. I've compiled a book of wisdom concerning them. Of course, only I have read the book. I have read thousands of other volumes, listened to both sages and fools regarding the Polarians. Whatever is known about them, I know. I tell you, Logan, that I'm on the verge of completing the quest. I only need one more thing to achieve success.
What's that? I asked.
The location of the Chrono Warp, he said, studying me closely.
Now I knew why he'd sacrificed his tasks to save me. He must think I was the ticket to that ancient piece of tech.
Where is the Chrono Warp, Kraling? You will tell me. If you don't, well, the director's fate will be paradise compared to what will happen to you.
Chapter 25. I stood blinking with indecision. I did not know the location of the Chrono Warp. Would I give Baran the location if I did know? Maybe. Let the Polarians deal with this cruel scholar. Why should I get in the way? However, if I said I did not know, would Baran kill me out of hand, toss me aside as so much used garbage? He hadn't hesitated to let his tasks die. Why would he bother with a Terran like me?
I'm waiting, Baran said in a silky voice.
I spread my hands, smiling in my best used car salesman's manner. Baran, Baran, I said. I propose a swap. His eyes narrowed. I desire Debbie, I said. Return her to me.
I do not make deals with low-order creatures, he said, interrupting.
But I'm not a creature. You've said so yourself. Besides, you do make deals. Look at the tasks.
They are my servants.
That's right, I said. You clothe and feed them, and in turn they give you loyal service. That's a deal.
You are a sophist.
I'm a realist. You desire the chronowarp. I want my woman. What could be easier than that we make a trade?
My putting you under the mind probe would be more efficient, he said.
I shook my head. Logically, that's false. If scanning my mind...
Wrenching information from it, he said. The director only spent a short time under the mind probe. He will never be the same for it.
Fine, I said. The probe doesn't scan, it rips out.
Precisely.
I smiled. Lord Baran, if the mind probe was 100% accurate, I would have already been under it. You would have ripped everything from my mind instead of going through this charade. He eyed me with what seemed a little more appreciation, but it could have been my imagination.
The probe lacks delicacy, he finally said. It is possibly a tool of last resort.
I will use it, though, if you're not forthcoming. Why not make the trade? That is logical.
Logical, perhaps, he said. It is also demeaning that one like me should have to dicker with a lowlife like you.
You're letting sentimentality get in the way of your greater good?
The universe is structured into strict hierarchies, Baran said sternly. There are higher order beings and lower order beings. It is not right.
I'll have to stop you right there due to your imprecision of speech, I said. A lion is a higher order predator, while a Thompson's gazelle is lower on the food chart, the lion's prey. Yet a lion cannot command the gazelle to give up its life. It must chase, catch, and only then devour the gazelle. Yes, you are a higher level being than me, but that does not mean you can simply wish events to occur. You must act, and act successfully, in order to achieve your goals.
Why not then?
I trailed off as Baran tore the baton from his side and aimed the glowing tip at me.
I weary of your prattle, Baran said. Give me the Chronowarp's location, or I shall destroy you.
We stared at each other until I admitted, I don't know the location.
You lie.
If you're so brilliant, surely you realize I'm telling you the truth. Baran lowered the baton and cocked his head.
Where do you gain this bravado? You must realize that I can destroy you with pathetic ease, yet you dare to lecture me as if I were a first-year cadet. It is unseemly, and you will pay accordingly.
He raised the baton, aiming it at me once more. I shook my head. You're speaking as if you've already achieved godhood. To be precise, you're acting in a delusional manner. That does not bode well for your eventual success. If you're not careful, hubris will consume your ambitions. Baran blinked several times, perhaps with astonishment. Then his features hardened and a ray emitted from the baton. I dropped back in paralysis and struck the floor. I grunted, but that was the only sound I could make. In a moment, I saw Baran loom over me. He looked down with contempt.
So much for your sophistry, Kraling. You have failed to persuade me. Instead, you have unleashed my anger. This will be the first step. You will accompany me as furniture. You will see, but you will not be able to act or speak. Perhaps you shall learn wisdom in the interim. I do not hold up high hope for that, but it will be a salutary time for you to contemplate your decision. If you continue to maintain silence or give lies about the chronowarp, then we shall proceed to the mind probe.
Baran gave me a sinister smile.
Before I take the final step, I shall attempt another avenue. You may even act as bait. Yes, that will be the program.
Baran's narrow nostrils flared. Then he straightened, opened a link, and gave harsh-sounding orders. As I lay paralyzed, barely able to breathe, I saw Tosks approach, set me on a stretcher, and carry me along the corridors. I could only presume they were taking me to a floater. As I lay on the stretcher, I attempted to twitch a finger or a toe. I had to break out of this paralysis. And I had to do it sooner rather than later. Chapter 26. Time passed as I struggled to move. What had Baran done to me? I could only stare up at the corridor ceiling. I could hear Tosks milling nearby, but couldn't turn my head to see them. Why did Baran think I knew the whereabouts of the Chrono Warp? The CAU had confiscated the device after our return from the Bermuda Triangle a year ago. It would seem the Director hadn't known where the Chrono Warp was. He would have told Baran if he'd known. Could the Clone Director have known the location? Was that another reason the clone had wanted to transfer onto my guard ship? If the Clone Director had known, he'd taken the secret with him to the grave. If I was a betting man, and I wasn't, I'd lay odds that either Jenna or more likely Kaz knew the Chrono Warp's whereabouts. Ah, that's what Baran must have meant about me being bait for a trap. Baran must be planning to capture one or both. That would necessitate a return to Earth. In time, I heard clicking heels. It might have been Baran. Harsh orders went out. Tosk scurried. Two of them picked up my stretcher and bore me along the corridor. We passed through a hatch, and the new ceiling jumped upward. It was cooler in here. This must be the hangar bay. Maybe a minute later, my two Tosks went up a ramp into a floater. They set me down and sat on either end of the stretcher. I did what I now did best. Nothing. I tried to force my fingers to twitch. I willed my toes. I felt a big toe twitch. What could... A shadow loomed before me. Baran, as from a great height, stared down at me. "Why are you sweating?" he asked. I could not answer. He crouched so his knees jutted out and prodded my side with his baton. I could feel the contact, but could do absolutely nothing about it. "I asked you a question, Crawling. Why are you sweating?" He peered into my eyes. A moment later, a cruel smile twisted into place. He rose and turned to something else, taking him out of my field of vision. I wanted to know what Baran was doing. I strove, and by the slowest small degrees, my head moved until I saw him studying a bulkhead screen. He began turning my way. I realized if he saw me staring at him that he would know that the paralysis had begun to wear off. As fast as I could, which wasn't very, I turned my head back the way it had been. I stared straight up and waited to see if he'd noticed. Apparently he had not. Time passed. I could feel the deck vibrate under me. That, I knew now, was one of the sensations of transfer. I presumed we were back on Earth. At that point, it occurred to me that maybe the paralysis wasn't wearing off so quickly, but that my quick healing nature was kicking in. Could one of his sensitivities, nullifications, or projections sense the healing? It would seem not, yet he had noticed me sweating. Perhaps it would be best to wait for further testing on my part. I would only attempt to move once Baran was elsewhere. Knowing I had the capacity to attempt to move made it more difficult to wait. While I'd been fully paralyzed, I'd had no choice in the matter. I almost sighed, which would have indicated a greater use of my lungs. I strove to breathe shallowly and slowly. I practiced meditation. I had to deceive Baran. I might not get another opportunity to try. The Dominie chuckled evilly. He issued orders. The floater vibrated and nothing happened afterward. I struggled to keep from turning my head to see what Baran was doing now. I kept imagining myself turning my head and seeing him grinning at me. My time would come. I kept telling myself that. It would come. I needed to practice patience, probably the most difficult virtue for any Terran to develop and perfect. "Yes," Baran said. It sounded as if his voice came from directly behind me. Perhaps with a lessening of the paralysis, my hearing had improved. The Tosks on either end of the stretcher leapt up, grabbed the stretcher, and lifted me. A hatch opened. The big werewolf creatures marched my stretcher and me down the ramp. It was light here. I heard a car in the distance. I must be back on Earth. Baran stepped before me. He gazed at me for several pregnant seconds. He turned to the Tosks and issued a command. The two creatures easily lifted me off the stretcher and propped me against a tall boulder. I was stiff like a plank and might have slid off, but they positioned me in a crook of stone. From the upright position, I saw a lonely freeway stretch into the distance. It was in a desert, maybe in Nevada, but maybe in California or Utah. Several fluffy white clouds drifted across the blue sky. Despite my condition, it felt wonderful to be on my planet again. Once more, Baran stepped into view.
"Kaz is coming," I'm not sure if Jenna is with him. They'll stop once they see it's you. Then... The Dominie chuckled as he placed a small object behind my feet. He clicked something and the object whirred into life. This is almost too easy, he said, straightening. Baron didn't bother looking at me again. Instead, he strode away, perhaps to the floater. The Tasks followed him like obedient dogs. I heard the floater move, most likely into a depression. I couldn't see. I wouldn't try to see until the right moment. I had no doubt Baron watched me on a screen in the floater. What about the device behind my boots? If I were to guess, it would be something to render Rax inert. Of course, it might be something to keep Rax from transferring the others out of danger. As I lay upright against the boulder, I moved my toes and wriggled my fingers. It was difficult. I was only beginning to thaw out. I moved my mouth and twisted my tongue. I had to get them limbered up and thus moved them, despite the possibility that Baron would detect that. A dark blue van sped along the lonely freeway. I couldn't see the occupants yet. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Jenna and Kaz inside. I moved my mouth, wriggled my toes, and slowly made a fist with each hand. I had to break the paralysis enough to shut off the device behind my boots. I had to, or Baron would capture Jenna, Rax, and possibly Kaz. Chapter 27. The seconds ticked by far too quickly as I struggled. I thought about Debbie alone in the Saturn station. If I couldn't free myself in time, she would remain a prisoner to this monster. Yes, Baron was a monster on the order of Stalin, Mao, or Hitler. All three were the worst sort of scum. It had always amazed me, though, that communists weren't equated as equally noxious and loathsome as Nazis. If one figured out the number of people harmed by the wretched dogmas, communism was the worst scourge ever inflicted on mankind. As I thought these dark thoughts, I struggled to make fists. Sweat pooled on my face and across my body, beginning to soak my garments. My heart began to hammer and my breath turned ragged. The van was closing in. I could see a wide-bodied individual behind the wheel. He had a wide head, dark hair. Kaz. I didn't see any sign of Jenna. Was this just the Neanderthal then, out for a joyride? I groaned in agony as it seemed my heart was going to hammer its way out of my chest. My left leg twitched. Sweat stung my eyes. At that point, the van's tires screeched against the freeway. The unwieldy vehicle began to fishtail. Smoke billowed from the wheels as the screeching went on and on. Finally, the van came to a stop. A door opened and Kaz raced across the front of the vehicle like a freight train. The Neanderthal could move when he wanted to, even though he had amazingly bowed legs. I could see the worry etched on his face. I opened my mouth and tried to warn him. I heard a whine and the floater appeared beside Kaz's van. The Neanderthal whirled around in surprise, but not in shock. He yanked the .357 from his shoulder holster, raised the gun, and must have thought better of firing at the armored floater. He turned around toward me and ran harder than ever. I could see the floater's ramp coming down. At that point, the device at my feet began to make louder whirring noises.
Logan!
Kaz shouted. I groaned, twitched harder, and toppled from the crook in the boulder. I tried to flail, to catch myself. Instead, I fell like an axed tree, hitting the gravelly ground with my face and nose. A shot rang out. It was loud. Something crunched nearby. My face hurt. My nose throbbed. Kaz slid to me, crouched by my body, and turned me over.
What's going on?
He shouted. I croaked a nonsense word.
You're stiff, he said.
I tried with desperation and managed to whisper,
Trap.
Kaz turned around and toward the floater. He peered for 3 seconds, maybe. He turned back to me, looked at something near my feet. He reached inside his coat and made something click. In a second, we vanished, to reappear approximately 500 yards, 5 football field lengths, on the other side of the floater.
Kaz,
I whispered.
This is a trap.
I got that,
he growled, lying down beside me. The Neanderthal propped my head up so I could see the van and the floater. Tasks had descended from the ramp, and now Baron marched from the teleporting vehicle. The Antaran pointed at the boulder where I'd been stood upright. Tasks, with beam carbines, sprinted there. Baron slapped his baton against a palm as he watched their progress. I slowly looked at Kaz.
What did you do?
We made the transfer hop,
he said.
I have a device that can do that.
Hop, I whispered.
It's not like Rax and the guardship, he said, but it's useful for getting out of jams. What's wrong with you?
I'm paralyzed.
Oh, I think I see. There was a transfer nullifier at your feet. I shot it, broke it. I guess you're bait.
Yes. Can you transfer again and get us out of here?
Not for a little while, he said while chewing on his lower lip. My hopper has to build up power.
We have to hide.
What do you think we're doing lying down? He asked. It's the only cover out here.
Kaz had a point, but it was clearly only a matter of time before Baran or one of his tasks spotted us out.
Logan, Kaz said, I have a confession to make.
I turned to him. The Neanderthal was laid out on the sand like me, watching Baran and his boys.
I'm waiting, I said.
Kaz opened his mouth, and something he saw made his teeth click together. He aimed the .357, fired a booming shot, and scrambled to his feet.
Sorry, Logan. I have to get out of here.
Kaz!
As he turned to run, a heavy green beam speared through his left thigh. The beam burned through the muscle, making a wretched stink. Kaz crumpled onto the sand beside me. He didn't make a sound. I couldn't believe it as the tough Neanderthal began crawling away. I struggled to move, to do something. Slowly, I raised my head. The beam had come from one of the bubble turrets in the floater. Kaz must have shot at Baran. The Antaran flew toward us. I groaned and struggled, but couldn't get my limbs moving. I saw Kaz crawling away, leaving a smear of blood like a slug trail. Despite the thigh wound, he was making good progress. I was surprised anyone could crawl that fast. Baran ignored me as he closed. He concentrated on Kaz as worry filled the Dominee's face. I think he feared that Kaz might die before he could interrogate him. In seconds, Baran flew past me and landed on his feet near the crawling Neanderthal.
Kaz!
I shouted. The Neanderthal looked back with a sweaty, pain-drenched face, rolled onto his back, tried to raise the big gun, and failed. Baran crunched across the sand to him.
Well, 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 the Dominee said. At last, we...
Kaz blew up. I mean, he simply exploded in a white-hot blast. I lay on the ground a little lower than where he'd been, so most of the blast blew over me. The percentage that did strike me rolled me over and over across the sand as it burned off my clothes and most of my hair and skin. The agony was intolerable. I was amazed that I could still see, that the blast hadn't burned out my eyes. I was certain it had burned off my eyebrows. I struggled to look, wanting to see Baran lying on the sand, dying before I also died. Instead, I saw a blue nimbus surrounding the Dominee as Baran climbed to his feet. The nimbus must have been his personal force field. Had it automatically snapped on at the last microsecond, or had he willed it on somehow? I guess the how didn't matter, just that Baran had survived the blast. The Dominee glanced at me and then at the spot where Kaz had ignited. The Antaran appeared perplexed more than anything else, going so far as to rub his electric blue glowing chin.
I wonder...
I heard him say. Then I passed out. Chapter 28. I won't recount the tedious details of the return trip, my time in solitude on the moon, and the sense of despair that came over me. Had Kaz been a clone? Had he carried a gut bomb? What had Rax called it before? A double helix cobalt bomb? How would I escape the killing blast of the bomb? Baran had cloaked me in a nimbus while on Earth and during the journey to the moon base. A cooling sensation had taken away the pain, and that must have woken me up. Later, on the moon, and after Baran removed the nimbus, I spent time in a strange, swirling pool. That seemed to speed up the healing process. Even so, I spent many restless days sitting on a stool drinking endless glasses of a green solution my TOS guards had left on the table. The solution left me groggy, but it allowed me to withstand the agony of my badly burned but healing skin. I recovered faster than a regular human would. By the time I could lie in bed again, and slept 18 hours straight, Baran must have discovered enough that he wanted to see me once more. A TOS guard led me from the cell to the meeting room. Baran was already there. Alone, he sat in a chair with his legs crossed in the British Lord fashion, and he indicated another chair for me.
I sat down. I could finally wear clothes again. My old clothes had burned up in the flash, as I said. I wore a utilitarian one-piece like the old 70s sci-fi movies depicted people wearing in the future. Baran studied me as he tapped a long forefinger on a knee. I'd had time to think about things. I'd decided on a conciliatory approach. I was tired of being a prisoner, and I felt sick for Debbie. It was time to try a new game plan. "Lord Baran," I said, "while we have been at odds in the past, I wish to thank you for the treatment you've given me that has allowed me to heal so rapidly." He nodded as if in appreciation of my thanks. "I would also like to tell you that I do not consider myself leagued against you in terms of your Polarian adventure."
"Oh?"
he said. I shook my head. "My primary complaint is that you took my woman. Other than that, I do not object to your having access to the Paradise Portal."
"What about the Neanderthal?"
"You did not kill him. He killed himself."
"Do you know why?"
"I would think for two possible reasons," I said. "One, in order to kill you. Two, to escape interrogation by you."
"Logical," Baran said. "And in my opinion, entirely correct. The question becomes, who sent him against me?"
"What?" I asked. "I hadn't thought of that."
"Consider the situation," Baran said.
I shook my head. I didn't grok him.
"Kaz deliberately set off the bomb. Yet I do not think he undertook the mission with the intention to die."
"I agree with that," I said, puzzled.
"Firstly," Baran said, "who put the bomb in his gut?"
I spread my hands outward. I had no idea.
"Secondly," Baran said, "who put the control device in his brain?"
"What device?" I asked.
"I scoured the detonation area and found evidence of the double helix cobalt bomb and pieces of the control device in Kaz's brain."
"But," I said.
"Please continue with your conjecture," Baran said.
"What was going on here?" I frowned before regarding Baran again. "I was led to believe that the director created the clones," I said.
"Who said anything about the Neanderthal being a clone?"
"Look, Lord Baran, Jenna Jones of the CAU informed me that the director created clones after visiting the underwater..."
"Pray, continue,"
Baran said softly. I wasn't sure that Baran knew about the ancient Polarian structure at the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. I didn't want to let him know if he didn't. I concluded in those few seconds that he had to know about it. He'd interrogated the director. The man must have given that information away. Thus, I told Baran about the black torpedo that had entered the Arctic Ocean structure. I told him that the director had also visited it. Baran shook his head.
"The director never visited the underwater site."
"I don't mean to dispute you, sir, but Jenna told me the director did."
"I realize that," Baran said. "Hasn't it occurred to you yet that Jenna was lying to you?"
I thought about that, soon shaking my head. "I don't think that's true."
"I know. You don't realize how deeply this goes. There is a hidden foe, Logan. I would have easily succeeded by now, but a keen mind opposes me, a mind of deep cunning and precision."
"Jenna Jones?" I asked. Baran snorted with derision, shaking his long head. I leaned back in my chair, considering the implications. Was the Kaz that blew up in the desert the same one that showed up at Friday's station?
"I have no way of verifying that or not," he said.
"Okay," I said. "Who is this hidden person? Do you know?"
"I have my suspicions, but I won't say just yet."
Baran crossed his legs in the other direction as he regarded me.
"However, that is neither here nor there just now. I still want the chrono warp. Will you help me acquire it?"
"Would you be interested in making the swap I proposed?" I asked.
"I can see the possibility of it," Baran said slowly. "No, Logan, that a dominee of the Antares Institute never breaks his word. If you deliver the chrono warp to me, I will retrieve your woman from the Saturn station and return her to you."
"What happens after that?" I asked.
"I hook the chrono warp to the Antarctica portal and enter the Polarian paradise."
"What about us?"
"Naturally, first I shall insist that you leave Antarctica."
"That's not what I meant, but that's no problem. We'll leave Antarctica. What about the Earth after you return from the paradise?"
Once I have what I need, I will leave the Earth and humanity to its own devices.
That sounds reasonable enough, I said. Why couldn't you have spelled it out like that in the first place?
Baran's eyes seemed to glow with fierce emotions. He clearly did not like the question, and that told me the answer. He must have come up against a dead end. Why then hadn't he put me under the mind probe? I knew there had to be a good reason.
If Jenna has the chrono-warp, he said, where do you think she would hide it?
I thought long and hard, and I had a suspicion. It seemed pretty obvious the longer I thought about it. You're a man of your word? I asked.
No, Baran said. I'm an Anteran Domini of my word. That is an infinitely greater thing.
I nodded. Okay, Lord Baran, I'm going to trust you. I think the chronowarp is somewhere in the Utah salt flats. Baran's eyes gleamed with avarice. He jumped to his feet and started for a hatch. Then he paused, turning back to me.
Hurry, he said. You're coming with me.
Chapter 29. It occurred to me as I boarded a floater in the hangar bay that I had become altogether too reasonable regarding Baran. I rubbed my forehead, thinking about that. Why would a few days, maybe a week in solitary, change my mind about Baran? Yes, I'd been badly burned. I'd seen Kaz die horribly at his own hand. Well, if Baran was correct, at the hand or mind of another. It would seem this other had used Kaz to attempt to kill Baran. That attempt had fizzled miserably. The protective nimbus, the great modifications, had saved the Dominee's life. I stood near Baran as the floater left the hangar bay and crossed the dark moonscape. We had 20 or so tasks along and the usual equipment. I carefully analyzed my thoughts regarding these past days. When had I reached the conclusion to play ball with Baran? I almost snapped my fingers. What had I been thinking? Baran had drugged me. Oh, I imagine the green drink had aided against infection and pain from the skin burns, but it must have also supplied my mind with a plain nice drug. However, even knowing he drugged me didn't change the idea of getting Debbie back and laying low afterward. Yeah, I know, I was the Earth's marshal. But what did it matter if Baran went to the Polarian paradise? Surely the ancient Polarians were all dead by now. Surely they would have come back a time or two if they all lived in paradise. None had ever returned. Thus, there must not be any Polarians in the paradise. Let's even suppose that Baran found a few fancy trinkets out there. That wasn't like aliens trying to mess with Earth, mess with people. It seemed to me that Lord Baran would at least go back to the Antares Institute to boast to all his friends what a great star he'd become. The point was that Baran would leave Earth and I'd have Debbie back in one piece. I glanced at the piloting task. The werewolf-like creature totally focused on the piloting screen. I glanced at the tasks waiting with their beam carbines. Baran had let other tasks die on a whim. I needed to remember that. Now I knew what my conscience was trying to remind me. What about the director? What about the miserable way Baran had treated the man? I'd vowed to kill the Dominee for that. Seeing the director horribly misused had made me furious. Why wasn't I furious anymore? It could only be because the Dominee had drugged me. He drugged me like teachers in grade schools drugged the boys because they acted too much like boys and the teachers wanted more girls. I'd always hated this practice. America needed its boys to be boys so they would turn into men. I cocked my head. Why did America need men? This time I snapped my fingers. Because by and large, men protected society. It was their age-old duty, and modern social justice warrior ideals didn't change that. If the men didn't grow up to be good American men, they would be too weak to defend America from the world, from the bad guys out there. I told myself that's what had happened to me. I was becoming like a weak, drugged-up drone. Drones didn't protect their country from invasion. Drones just did what drones did best, lounge around and watch while Rome burned. Well, baby, I wasn't going to be a drone, a castrated weakling. You are one right now, I told myself. You're helping Baran do whatever he wants to do on Earth because all you're thinking about is Debbie. Are you even thinking about Debbie or just thinking about getting your girl back so you can have fun with her?
Is something wrong? Baran asked. I shook my head. We're almost ready for transfer to Earth, he said.
Great.
Your voice inflection is different.
That's nerves, I suppose.
Are you having second thoughts about this?
Nope, I said.
You will soon have Debbie in your arms, Brown told me. You will soon be free of the collar. You can then do whatever you wish with your life.
Sounds good to me, I said, lying through my teeth. I now knew without a doubt that the drug had robbed me of something essential. I used to wonder about that, about what would happen if someone made me weak. I figured I would remember what I thought in my free days and simply follow that through force of will. But now that I was here, the force of will was difficult to generate. I needed some of my old emotions to give me the energy to hate Baran. Ah, Debbie used to get on me for saying I hated something. She said that wasn't nice, and that it framed my mind the wrong way. I hate Baran, I hate Baran, I hate Baran, I chanted over and over in my mind. If Debbie was right, I would soon start feeling the hate. I needed that hate about now. I needed a counteragent against the drugs I'd sipped like a fool this past week.
We're transferring, Baran informed me.
The floater vibrated, and we appeared on the Utah salt flats at night. I stood beside the Dominie, silently chanting my hate litany, trying to drum up some genuine feelings. It wasn't working yet. The moon's rays cast the salt flats into a beautiful, silvery paradise. I shook my head as I growled low in my throat.
That is unseemly behavior, Baran said, turning to me. You are acting agitated. That is unusual.
Why? I snapped. Because you've drugged me? A silence fell between us. I closed my eyes. Why had I said that? Probably because I'd been chanting to myself too long that I hated Baran.
You are having second thoughts, he said. That is a pity, as I was ready to give Debbie back to you.
Look, I said. You have to promise me you won't hurt any more Earthlings.
I must do this?
Baran asked lightly. I almost tried to jump him. I remembered the blue Nimbus in time. I had a feeling it would snap on if I actually landed a real hit. I had to keep cool. I had to remain free if I could. I had to stop acting like an idiot and actually use my head. Baran sighed.
I'd hoped this would work, Logan. The truth is that the mind probe is a tedious affair. It has a 40% chance of success. Oh, I'll get information, but it might not be the correct information. The rest of your brain will be useless after a strong probing. Thus, it truly is a measure of last resort.
You drugged me, I said. He shrugged. I clutched my head. It was overly dramatic, but I wanted my freedom. I'd become sick of Baran, sick of the moon base, and sick of hanging around these werewolf-like creatures. Why couldn't the Tusks rise up against Baran? What was wrong with him? The floater grounded against salt. The hatch opened, and Baran moved toward the opening. He made several chopping gestures and guttural remarks. Two big Tusks flanked me. Each werewolf-like creature grabbed an arm. Then they forced me to follow the Dominie out of the floater, down the ramp, and toward the hole in the ground that used to be CAU headquarters.
Chapter 30
Baran floated effortlessly through the open ruins, using his baton to shine a strong light at the innards. The two Tusks and I took the torturous route, climbing down over twisted debris, wrecked furniture, and dirt. Other Tusks followed, warily trying to watch everywhere at once in case someone attempted to ambush us. Soon enough, Baran shouted orders from where he hovered. Tusks jogged forward, shouldered their carbines, and bent their shoulders against beams, heavy furniture, and other blocking items. Metal groaned, wood creaked, and things crashed as the Tusks hurled them aside. Baran alighted onto the floor, shining his baton light down various empty corridors. It took us a solid 2 hours of painstaking effort to reach what seemed to be the bottom of CAU. 10 sweaty Tusks, they stank horribly, panted as they leaned against corridor walls. My two guardians still gripped my arms. Baran had moved ahead of us, shining his bright light on the floor. I didn't know what he was searching for, but there was clearly nothing else down here. It's not my fault, I called out. Baran swung around, shined that light in my face, and seemed to approach me. I squeezed my eyes shut against the bright light.
What isn't your fault? The Dominie demanded, finally diverting the light.
I opened my eyes. The air was stale down here, and the place seemed oppressive. Was that because we'd come down so far, or was there another reason? We hit a dead end, I said. It was just a guess on my part about the chrono warp, you know. I don't want you to take that out on Debbie. I wasn't trying to trick you. I really thought the chrono warp would be down here. Baran searched my face for several seconds.
Do you truly believe I am that dense?
What are you talking about? Baran swung the baton light about.
Can't you sense it? My tusks do. They're frightened.
I don't sense anything, I said.
Are you sure?
He asked.
Don't you feel a weight against your spirit?
I must have shown my surprise because I did feel something. I'd been feeling it, but just chalked it up to a case of the nerves after 2 hours of toil.
I see you do sense it,
Baran said as he nodded.
But it seems that your surprise is genuine. I find that interesting.
You know, I said, I'm tired. I'm sick of these tasks holding my arms, and I'm mad at myself for letting you drug me so easily.
That's nonsense. You were in my custody for over a week. What would you have eaten if you'd avoided every food or drink in fear of what I'd put in it? Yes, I fed you drugs. You had no choice in that, so why berate yourself over it?
Habit, I said after a moment's thought. But why? I don't know, why are you trying to cheer me up? Baran turned away and seemed to freeze. The tasks straightened and glanced at each other as he became absolutely motionless. They brought up their beam carbines and seemed more wary than ever. I tried to rip my arms out of my guard tasks' grip, but they were having none of that. One of them gave me a warning growl. The other painfully tightened his hold. Abruptly, Baran inhaled deeply and opened his eyes. He turned to me, giving me his superior grin.
Your trick failed, he said.
What trick? What are you talking about? Baran made a harsh noise. My tasks shoved me forward as they followed me. The others lined up, ready to march to who knew where. Baran took several steps toward the last wall. He didn't look at it, but swept his beam over the floor. He seemed to be searching for something. Baran halted with the beam centered on the ground. The tasks slid past him, aiming their carbines at the spot on the floor. The Dominie made another of his harsh growls. My guardian tasks released me. I massaged my biceps, giving each of my guards a dirty look.
Logan, check the floor.
I thought about telling him off, but shrugged instead. I stepped up to the baton light and studied the floor there.
No, Baran said. Get down on your hands and knees and feel around.
I gave him a funny look. He seemed serious. With a second shrug, I did as he bid. To my astonishment, I soon felt. I moved my hands along what might have been an iron rod about an inch off the floor. I couldn't see the rod, but I could sure feel it. What is this? I asked.
Precisely, Baran said. Explain what you're touching.
I did. The blue nimbus snapped on around Baran.
Tug it,
he said, his voice sounding as if it came from far away. I kept staring at him. He feared some sort of a trap, a bomb, perhaps. That seemed reasonable after what Kaz had done. Thus, he'd set up his protective shield. But what about the rest of us down here?
Tug it, Baran repeated. I think it will unseal a hatch.
I laughed bitterly and almost told him, you can come and tug it. Then I thought, what the hell, and pulled, but nothing happened. So I pushed. The rod moved smoothly, and I heard an ominous click. Chapter 31. Here's the one piece of anticlimax. No bomb detonated. We all survived the rod's movement and the click. I heaved a sigh of relief as sweat dripped from my forehead. I scrambled up afterward, as a visible hatch appeared like on a submarine. The hatch moved upward and stopped once it reached a 90-degree position.
What do you see?
Baran asked. I peered at the hole in the floor, saw the beginning of a steel ladder, again like that on a submarine. Not much, I told him. Baran made a harsh sound. A moment later, a task handed me a flashlight. I grumbled under my breath, clicked on the flashlight, stepped beside the hole, and shined my light into it. As far as the light shined, I saw the ladder going straight down into what seemed like a long steel tube. I explained all that to Baran, who stood waiting, still surrounded by his blue nimbus.
What is your belief? He finally asked me.
Not much about this, I said. It's a secret path to a hideaway. I guess the Chrono Warp is down there.
There is much to this place that you are not considering. For instance, it is summer now.
Yeah, I said. So what?
What do you suppose it is like here in winter?
Colder, I guess.
Yes, true, Baran said. It also rains outside. It rains heavily in the mountains.
Lots of rain, I said. Got it.
You still do not comprehend what I'm driving at. Let us try another tack. How do you suppose all the salt was deposited on the flats above?
Didn't think much about it, I admitted.
Water flows to the lowest point. Water flows here during the winter rains, but especially in early spring. After the water evaporates, the salt remains. That means that much of the salt flats are covered with a lake during spring. It is an extremely shallow lake, but a lake nonetheless.
I frowned, shrugging, not seeing what he was getting at.
I realize that CAU has advanced technology, Baran said. I do not believe, however, that the technology would easily allow them to build such an underground facility out here under a lake, especially not a large and complex facility that has deep secret hiding locations even farther underground.
Are you saying CAU headquarters should flood in winter and spring?
Most assuredly it should flood.
Okay, I'll bite. What does it signify to you that this place is here?
I know exactly what it signifies. I'm astounded that you do not.
You're the Antares Dominee. I'm just a dumb jock human.
Think, Logan. Truly think and see if you can decipher the clues.
Baran was getting on my nerves again. But there was something else, too. He wasn't acting like the alien super genius, but like an old man trying to get a younger one to start using his head. At that point, it began to dawn on me. The Star Corps had been in Far Butte, Nevada. Greenland had held ancient underground facilities, and there was a deep structure at the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. This has to do with your hidden foe, I said. Baran nodded encouragingly. Are you saying this is an ancient Polarian place? I asked.
I have begun to suspect so.
Why did CAU blow it up then?
Who said they did?
Your hidden foe again? He or she blew it up?
Logan, I am surprised at your stupidity. You are still failing to see the obvious. You believe your government put together the CAU. I now believe that is false. Although it would not surprise me if the people in the know in your government believe they ordered the creation of the counter-alien unit.
Listen, I appreciate the lesson. I really do. But can't you just get to the freaking point?
Don't misinterpret my patience, Baran warned. That is a reason I am attempting to broaden your thinking. For one thing, it actually helps me think to verbalize these things. Someone has masterfully used the underwater Arctic Ocean base or the items found on it. Jenna gave you a story to indicate that the director and Kaz did these things. No, I doubt humans were the ones who did so.
Polarians? I asked dubiously. Baran smiled in a predatory way.
Polarians make the most sense. That would explain the clones, this underground base, and the extraordinary...
Hey, wait a minute, I said, interrupting. You captured CAU people. I saw your tasks herding them onto floaters. I don't know why I forgot about the captives. What happened to them? Baran stared at me before saying,
They're at the Saturn station under continuous interrogation and study.
By your tasks? I asked, outraged.
Don't be absurd. I have confederates of high ability and mental acuity. They have preferred to remain in the background at a Saturn moon.
I shook my head at these revelations. Kaz had exploded. The clone director had exploded. Whoever this hidden foe might be had a ruthless streak a mile long. I could see Argon sacrificing humans in whatever he thought might be for the greater good. Yet what would Argon, or any Polarian for that matter, believe was the greater good? I'd seen the director at the moon base. Baran had tormented and degraded the man. I couldn't trust the Antaran, not after having witnessed that, and not seeing the way he'd sacrificed his tasks at the drop of a hat. The Dominee had a philosopher's brutality to do anything in the furtherance of his pet theories. I eyed the hole with the steel ladder and wondered about jumping in and seeing what would happen. I didn't like the idea of splatting at the bottom. Why take such a crazy risk when there might be other avenues to try? The new implications and possibilities continued to rattle in my mind. It all gave me a headache. I'm not an Antaran, I told Baran. I'm an old-style Terran,
A throwback to how we used to be before the 21st century. For some reason, you've started treating me with kid gloves. Yeah, that happened after Kaz or his clone blew up. Did he almost kill you? Did the near-death experience give you a heart? Baran stared at me as if I were a caterpillar about to begin my metamorphosis. What was he thinking? What was his ultimate plan regarding me? Why have you begun treating me differently? I asked.
I doubt you'll believe my answer, he said. It has to do with luck. Yours, in this instance. You have far too much of it. You make uncanny guesses without enough information and have survived far too many critical dangers. The preposterousness of all that finally penetrated my intellect. Once I turned my reason upon the problem, several interesting solutions reared up.
Such as? I asked.
I have been pondering that for days, weighing one possibility with another. I know about your gene therapy. You heal faster than a normal human. You have interacted with a StarCorps and a Polarian. You have gone to a different dimension and been influenced by a Polarian machine that gave you a vision and what else?
What do you mean, what else? That was it.
I don't think so. I think the Polarians have altered you.
I think the gene therapy began that. I have begun to suspect that Rax has played a deeper game than you realize. You are not like other humans. That is clear.
What does that make you? I'm uncertain regarding that as well.
None of that explains why you're treating me differently.
Of course it does, Baran said. I have given you the explanation. I believe I would not have discovered the invisible rod to the hidden hatch unless you were along. In some manner that I cannot yet recognize, you have a greater propensity toward promoting problem-solving, shall we say. You seem to function as a catalyst.
That's just gobbledygook, I said. It doesn't mean anything concrete.
Oh, it most certainly does. It is the reason I am treating you like a fellow Domini instead of the dullard human that you pretend to be.
Yeah, I said. Then how about removing this collar? If I'm so special... Baran raised his baton and pressed a switch. My collar clicked. Surprised, I reached up and removed it from my throat. With a sudden lurch, I hurled the metal from me so it clattered along the floor.
Emotional, Baran observed.
I'm not a slave or a dog, I snarled.
Quite true,
Baran said, checking his wrist. It held what looked like a wristwatch.
I believe that is long enough.
He turned to the tasks and gave harsh commands. They peered at the hole in the floor deep under the earth. The first one headed to it, slid his feet in, and began to climb down. The others followed until it was just me, Baran, and my two former guardians.
After you, Baran said.
What's down there? I asked.
That's what we're about to find out.
Why did we wait before we descended?
A case of caution, he said.
I know that, I said. I want to know why.
Prudence. More at this point, I will not say.
Are you ready? I looked at the hole, at Baran, the two tasks, and threw my hands into the air. Sure, why not? I said. I crouched, put my feet in, turned around, and began to climb down the steel ladder. Chapter 32. I've never been on a ladder for so long. This one went on and on for what seemed like forever. And then it went farther. The Tasks all wore hard hats, and soon after we began to descend, their helmet lamps snapped on. Before this, only half the Tasks had been using the lamps in their helmets. The greater illumination gave a needed boost to my morale, at least. The process seemed endless. One step down until the ball of the foot was solidly upon the next lower rung, then one hand down to a secure grip, another foot down, and then another hand, only to start all over again. My feet began to ache from the repeated pressure point contact on the metal rungs. 10 minutes later, my hands started to throb. I don't know why I hadn't looked up yet, but I finally did, wanting to see how Baran was doing. He wasn't holding on to the ladder, of course. I should have remembered. He floated above me, using the gravity mesh and the soles of his feet to simply drift at the same speed we descended. I felt an intense sense of injustice. If we hurt, he should hurt. I suppose that was juvenile thinking, but it's what I felt nonetheless. The monotony of the climb had dulled my thinking. Seeing Baran doing it the easy way cleared my thoughts. How were we going to get back up? I know. We would climb up. but it's one thing going down as compared to climbing all that way back up. I need a break, I said. Baran gave an order. The task below me on the ladder stopped. I'm supposed